From Wisconsin Public Radio, it's Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studio. Thank you very much for joining us today on a very exciting conversation having to do with who will become the next mayor of the city of La Crosse. We have both of the candidates running for that office here with us today. Vicky Markison and Mitch Reynolds are running against each other for the nonpartisan seat, and I'm going to give them an opportunity right off the bat here to introduce themselves. We'll start with Vicky. Let's start with you. Give voters a sense of who you are, why you're running, what qualifies you for the office of mayor.
Sure, Vicky Markison. I have lived in La Crosse for 25 years now. Moved here to be a TV reporter. Did that for 4 years. Met my husband pretty early into moving to La Crosse and had to set aside those big TV dreams of moving to big, bad markets. And so I then moved on to the Builders Association, helped literally direct competitors all come together and work on quality housing, education, networking amongst themselves. Then moved on to Seven Rivers Alliance, which is a regional economic development group, blurs borders, 3 states, 13 counties. Then after that, I moved on to the Chamber of Commerce. So I then started running, really considered running for mayor in November, really got my arm twisted by some people saying, hey, based on your leadership skills, what you've done for this community, you'd make a great mayor, please consider it. And so threw my hat in the ring a little later than others. And what I look at is, I've told the story. I have been the recipient of the incredible generosity of this community. I can see what it can do, and I really look forward to being the mayor, utilizing my leadership skills, the relationships that I've built over 25 years, and uniting people so that we can move La Crosse forward.
The other candidate for mayor in La Crosse is Mitch Reynolds. And Mitch, talk about your qualifications for the office of mayor and what made you decide to run.
Well, thanks, Ezra. Thanks for having us here today. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about this campaign. This has been such an incredible adventure in a lot of different ways, and wonderful to talk to so many people who have such a vested interest in the outcome of this race. I've been in La Crosse for a little over 26 years. I have a couple of kids that grew up here, went to La Crosse Public Schools, and live here as well. I am currently the operations manager for Whole Tree Structure, which is a sustainable industries woman-owned B Corp that builds structures out of small dimensional round timber. And before that, I was the news director and a host for a news and talk program at Midwest Family Broadcasting on the news station WIZM. Prior to that, a number of different things that helped me survive in La Crosse with a young family. I'm running because we have people in our community that, like I did, fight every day to have the same rights that the rest of us take for granted, because we need to consider the health and well-being of people in every decision that we make in the city, because we have neighbors who sleep on the streets at night, because we need to achieve equity and social, racial, economic, and environmental justice and fairness, because we have to think beyond the nebulous ideas of growth and prosperity and think about how our families in our community continue to struggle. And I am so blessed to have come to the city, had my children grow up in the city. I lived in poverty in the city, and I was fortunate to get help and find a way out. And I want to make sure that others have the same opportunities.
Our first topic today is infrastructure, because it's one of the things that comes up when you talk about local government. Why aren't they paving this street or that street, or what's the matter with this piece of how our city fits together? And on the order of infrastructure, every mayor that comes into office sets up a plan to pave so many miles of road a year and all of that thing. And the city streets are under maintenance for, on a certain schedule, and that works the way it works. But a lot of the things that people complain about in our area are those thoroughfares in our city which require state cooperation as well as local cooperation to pave. So as mayor, what are you going to do to work more closely? Let's start with Mitch on this one. What are you going to do to work more closely with different state entities that have influence over how our roads are cared for?
I mean, collaboration, cooperation is the key for any of these conversations, especially when you're dealing with the state. You have to have daily interactions with the DOT to make sure that everybody is on the same schedule and the same understanding of how Highway 16, Highway 33, you know, these are the keys, making sure that we're addressing those needs within the city of La Crosse and making sure that the state follows through with its obligations to pay for the state highways that it needs to pay for. I mean, you know, certainly it's important for our citizens to ensure that these streets are well taken care of, but we want to hold the state accountable to ensure that what they're doing is fulfilling their obligations as well. It's very easy for state government to simply just pass off these obligations to city government and hope that they can wait it out long enough so that cities, and then there was an extraordinary amount of pressure for the city of La Crosse to do that very thing, to simply fix Highway 16, for instance, and just get on with it. And, you know, to his credit, our mayor, Tim Cabot, held his ground and waited until the state was ready to pony up, as it were. And so beginning the construction on Highway 16, La Crosse Street, if you will, begins, the planning anyway, begins this year, and the construction should be completed next year. I mean, obviously, it is essential to make sure that we're doing that. It's also really, really important, you know, when we talk about Highway 33, for instance, to make sure that the city is communicating with our business owners when we're actually doing those repairs, like what happened this past year when the city engineering department showed up at Javavino in La Crosse and said, hey, we're going to shut this place down in 2 days, and then started, you know, putting barricades up. We need to be more communicative with our business owners so that when we're doing infrastructure repairs, that we're not negatively impacting what they're doing, and we're not negatively impacting the people who are employed and the people who own these businesses. That's the most important thing.
Vicky, what's going to be your approach if you're elected mayor to that cooperation between all the entities that have an interest in infrastructure improvement?
Well, I think anybody driving on our roads would say they have a vested interest in what's happening. It's probably the number two thing I hear from going door to door is not just the quality of the road. So, of course, everyone knows, everyone goes straight to La Crosse Street, right? When is La Crosse Street going to get redone? And as we know, it's coming. And thankfully, it's being done right. It's going all the way down to the base of it and rebuilding the entire street. So it will have endurance for years to come. But the other piece that a lot of people don't understand is what impacts them on our city streets. So one more complaint about the bump outs on Cass Street, right? People do not understand why that happened. It's also a number one comment made about local roads. The other piece is traffic circles. So a lot of times they're used for traffic calming to make traffic not go so straight. But I don't think all of the neighbors have been notified that these things are going in and that they can provide feedback. So it gets to engaging our neighborhoods. So the neighbors certainly know their roads and their community and their traffic really well. And the more that we can empower at just the most fundamental level, the more we can empower those neighborhood associations to be that boots on the ground communication entity, and then that bubbles up to the city. And then that we are having what I would say is win-win conversations with the DOT. I know, having had conversations with the DOT, they get blamed for a lot of things, and they have said to me, we give money to the city of La Crosse to maintain the roads for us, that they don't come in and contract that themselves. They work with the city. So we really need to be making sure we're not, that we're working as a team, that we're not blaming. And I really want to talk to City Hall in terms of how much are we getting for the state? What are we spending? And as we're looking at the 6 miles of roads that is the city's goal, which I would continue to do, we really need to be saying how much of that is DOT maintenance for the state highways.
That's Vicki Markison, a candidate for mayor. We're also joined by candidate Mitch Reynolds. Vicki, another side of this infrastructure issue, through the years, different ideas have cropped up about creating a north-south thoroughfare through the marsh in La Crosse, which would aid people's commutes back and forth to work in a certain respect, but would also be devastating for certain areas of wildlife habitat and recreational portion of our city as well. What's your feeling on that? And as mayor, would you push for a north-south thoroughfare through the marsh?
Let me pull a little bit wider on that. So the current project is to solve safety that goes north and south. So it does not have to be a new road going through the marsh. I think that's a misconception that a lot of people have, as the DOT does have funding. That funding does include working with our existing roads. It is a mechanism to pay, for example, for Highway 16 getting redone. My stance has always been we need to keep that money, even though it's not an active pot sitting there. It's like a to-do that they know that this is needed to improve safety in our area, they being the DOT, and it remains on the books as a to-do. I will tell you, that has been my stance when I was with the Chamber of Commerce, and I hesitated in another debate in terms of am I for, am I not for a north-south corridor? And I realized why I was hesitating answering that question. And it's because I tend to think three steps ahead, saying, okay, if we say no to something going through the marsh, does that remove options for us? Does that remove options to fix our floodplain issues? Does that remove an option for, again, pie in the sky, any sort of alternative transportation like elevated rail or something of that nature? Does that remove elevated road? Is that an option on the table? And bottom line, what I came back to, honestly, this was just a couple days ago, as I started thinking, why do I hesitate answering that question? People don't want a road through the marsh. I recognize that. And so we really need to be working with the DOT on we can't just keep pushing. We want all alternatives. That is not going to resonate with the DOT, that they're going to come back and say that it does not meet our safety requirements. And so what that means is we have to understand what they're trying to do. We have to, as a city, come up with proposals that address the safety issues, and then we work towards a solution that doesn't involve a road through the marsh.
Mitch, same question to you. What about thoroughfare projects or commuter-based projects? How do you evaluate that in terms of environmental impact on our marsh areas?
Obviously, a road through the marsh would have enormous impacts environmentally, and there is no equivocation. I am absolutely not in support of a building option for adding lanes to into and out of La Crosse. It is not it's not accurate to say that there are we definitely do not have other options here. The DOT wants to build first. They want a construction option. I'm not in favor of that. I don't believe more lanes into and out of La Crosse helps our city in any kind of way. It's not sustainable for the city of La Crosse moving forward. It's not sustainable for our neighborhoods. It's not sustainable socially. It's not sustainable environmentally. There's nothing sustainable about adding more lanes into the city of La Crosse. And that is precisely what this money would be used for. That's why it's enumerated. That's why our city councils asked for it not to be enumerated. That's why our state representative Jill Billings has asked for it not to be enumerated. There's no two ways about this. So the DOT wants more lanes. It is not something that is beneficial for our city moving forward. It's just not something that's going to benefit us. It provides an easy access into and out of our city for those who would wish to live out of our city, but benefit from the services within. I'm not in favor. Full stop.
Mitch Reynolds is a candidate for mayor of La Crosse. Vicki Markison, a candidate as well, joins us today on Newsmakers. And that election, a nonpartisan election, is on April 6th. And we'll have more conversation with Mitch Reynolds and Vicki Markison in just a moment. If you'd like more information about Newsmakers, you can find previous episodes or stream any part of conversation that you've missed today on our website at wpr.org/newsmakers. We'll be back in just a moment on Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest Wisconsin studio, joined today by both of the candidates for mayor of La Crosse. That nonpartisan election is on April 6th. That's, of course, a Tuesday. Vicki Markison is joining us, as well as Mitch Reynolds. And we've been talking about infrastructure, and now we're going to turn our attention to another area of concern to anybody who owns a home in La Crosse, and that's taxes, specifically property taxes. Our city boasts some of the area's highest property taxes. And my question, starting with you, Mitch, are residents getting what they pay for in terms of the property taxes that they pay in the city of La Crosse?
Well, I mean, I think it's a great question, Ezra, and I really think that depends on who you talk to, because I've talked to people who really believe that they're getting value in their services for the amount that they're paying for property taxes, and a lot of people who think that they're paying too much, or, you know, and it really, again, it depends on where you're at and who you're talking to and the type of services that they're taking advantage of. We can do a lot to help mitigate the impact of property taxes. A lot of that is through increasing property values, and we can do that through development within the city of La Crosse. We can do that through our housing replacement program that's already in place using CDBG money that is a HUD financing. We know that the low property values overall within the city of La Crosse means that the cost of services, and that's police and fire and library and everything else, the cost of those services fall disproportionately on the people who can least afford them. And those are the people in the lowest value homes. And so obviously we need to do things to address that. And part of that is increasing property values and making sure that we have property values in which that, so that the levy itself decreases, so that the impact of services is not as impactful on those who own lower value properties. You know, one of the key things that we have to do to decrease property taxes is to increasingly address development in certain areas of the city. And that means certainly the River Point District, north of Riverside Park in La Crosse, that's a huge potential for development. It can add significantly to the property's tax base. You know, that means the levy goes down for all of those other people that are facing those high property taxes. You know, and addressing the low number of homes that are of higher values. And it's important, obviously, to deal with this, not only because of the impact of those who are individuals, because that's super important for what they pay for property tax and what they're getting for services, but then how that constant exodus, if you will, of people from La Crosse because of what they perceive as the high property taxes, how that's impacting neighborhoods as a whole. And that can have a deleterious effect on certain areas of the city. So whether people feel like they're getting value for the property taxes oftentimes depends on who you're talking to. I've talked to people who have both perceptions. And overall, the goal is to make sure that while we maintain a level of assessment throughout the city, that we're decreasing the impact on individual homeowners so that we maintain the level of services while decreasing the level of impact.
That's Mitch Reynolds. Vicki Markison, to you now, what about property taxes? Residents get concerned because they feel like they're paying more than some of their neighbors, but are they getting what they pay for?
Property taxes is the number one thing I hear going door to door and talking to people. I would say 95% of the people that I talk to say our property taxes are too high. And they understand the rationale that it will be very challenging at the times that we have and the budget that our city faces and the upcoming challenges that unveil themselves almost on a weekly basis here, that it will be challenging for us to lower the property tax base. I've even talked to people in City Hall who said the only way to lower taxes is to cut services and then pick which services you want to cut. So we really have to look at this as it is developing within our boundaries. We cannot forget, though, that we have some boundary agreements that are going to be signed, and those will add to our property tax base. It may not be immediate, but it also would bring in funding that helps offset our water and sewer. So the great example that I give, though, is the impact of developing our commercial, in addition, of course, to our residential. But if you look at the mall, so the mall used to pay in $1.4 million in property taxes a few years ago. It's now paying in $605,000. It is nearly impossible for us to make up that tax gap through residential. We would have to have a major boom in residential to make up just that singular tax. So when we can develop our commercial properties and do it well, we can basically provide fewer services. And this is something that former planner Jason Gilman and I agreed on, which was commercial uses fewer services. They don't have the need for libraries. They don't have the need for parks. So when you can build up your commercial base, it actually makes things much easier on the residential base. So we have Bridgeview Plaza, finally purchased by a local owner. There is some mixed use that is going in there. That's the win-win of how you get the commercial, but you also get some improvements to residential. And then in terms of housing, yes, we do have to look at the fact that La Crosse has a lot of housing that is of low value, and that's fine, but we have to develop housing along the entire, I call it the entire journey, right? You may start out as a renter, and then you're going to buy your first home, and then you're going to buy your second home, and then at some point you may need retirement housing. And I will tell you, we are losing, first of all, we're losing a lot of homeowners that are coming to La Crosse that aren't choosing La Crosse, and we have to fix that. And then second of all, people for their move up are choosing other areas because, and oftentimes we don't have the type of housing that they're looking for. So we really need to, as we look at how we reduce our property taxes, we have to make sure that we're keeping everyone in the city of La Crosse, that we're keeping those property taxes even, and that we're really maximizing the commercial development that we have available.
We're visiting today with Vicki Markison and Mitch Reynolds, candidates for mayor in La Crosse. I want to turn now to the subject of representation. It's not been without comment that if elected, Vicki, you would be the first woman ever to hold the office of mayor. But that's not the only aspect of representation. It's no surprise that no matter who wins this election, the next mayor of La Crosse will still be a white person. And some people would say, well, that's the majority of the city. So, of course. But what do you say to those people of color who live in the city and are part of our community who feel undervalued and who feel like they are not represented well in city government? Vicki?
First and foremost, thank you for recognizing just because I would be the first woman, it doesn't mean that I don't come without qualifications. So I don't want that to be the reason that I would win. So to the point of underrepresentation, I mean, I can't ignore the fact that, what is it? The city is 150 years old, and it's the first time we've had a woman. So obviously we have to be uplifting people and encouraging them to get engaged, encouraging their voice, encouraging all voices. To me, that is the piece as we move forward. That's the piece that Mayor Cabot did really well that I hope to continue, is having an open door to the Shoulder to Shoulder Network, to the Diversity Council, to the LGBTQ Center. Again, it's making sure that we have those connections to City Hall, that we're encouraging people to engage, and that that voice gets represented in not just in City Council, but throughout our community. I'm going to tell you that I helped create a First Friend program at the Chamber of Commerce, and it was for people that are, it still exists, is for people that are relocating to this area to ensure that they're getting connected to the resources that we have here. That group is predominantly the BIPOC. So they're Black, Indigenous, people of color, and we want them to be coming here. So they are looking at our community and saying, where is the diversity of restaurants, and where do I go to find what I consider parts of my normal life, and how do I get connected to others? And so that's a beginning of connecting people, of making sure that we're putting our best foot forward and attracting. But then we need to be celebrating the culture that we do have, and making it a culturally diverse and friendly and open community.
Mitch Reynolds, to you, what about the concerns of minorities and feeling underrepresented in city government, and what role can the mayor have in bridging that gap between different parts of our community?
Representation is a fantastic question, and I'm just thrilled to be among the supporters for those who are running for city council, who are among those underrepresented groups. Chauncey Turner and Keontae Turner, African-American men who are running for city council in the city of La Crosse. I'm a proud supporter of their campaigns, and Casey Kaye, who would be the first non-binary representative on city council, representing the 9th district in the city of La Crosse. I'm a proud supporter of their campaign. Very happy that we have individuals who are stepping up to bring additional voices to the city of La Crosse. And it's important for the mayor to empower these voices, important for the mayor to empower all voices throughout the city to make sure that those voices are being heard. And some of the issues that are the most pressing within the city of La Crosse for those in our BIPOC communities, as well as anybody who is vulnerable or marginalized within our community. And, you know, I've talked at length about how I think that it is important for us to bridge those socioeconomic racial gaps that exist, especially with connectivity, and why I've advocated for a citywide broadband. We saw during the pandemic how so many of our children were not able to access the internet at home and to finish their lessons. And that's why I've advocated for making sure that we have additional broadband connectivity. And that's not just for our, you know, and primarily, again, these are our children of color who are facing these issues with a lack of access. But certainly for those people who are engaged in telehealth, I mean, that's, again, those people who struggle economically, we need to make sure that they're connected to the internet with that broadband. I've talked about housing discrimination and how the job of the mayor is to make sure that there is a focus on dealing with issues of housing discrimination. I mean, we have the Human Rights Council and the commission, and that's fantastic, but we need to have someone in the office of mayor who is making sure that complaints about housing discrimination are followed through on. We're HUD recipients within the city of La Crosse, and it is our obligation to make sure that we are following through with complaints based on the Fair Housing Act. I mean, that's absolutely essential. So in terms of making sure that we have voices represented, I mean, that's empowering voices. That's making sure that we're going out on the streets and advocating for those people who are underrepresented. I've talked to folks. I had a wonderful discussions with the Southside Moms United group and their conversations talking about how they struggle with housing discrimination and job discrimination and issues with their children in schools. I mean, what that takes is a mayor who's willing to not only empower those voices and bring those voices into City Hall, but also champion those causes. I think that that's one of the most essential parts. Have a mayor that's out front. Have a mayor that's willing to get out in front of issues and really take a stand.
Let's talk about COVID and the city's response to it, the area's response to it. To the extent that the office of the mayor has any influence over our area's response to it, what do you think that the city administration should have done differently in response to COVID-19? Mitch, let's start with you for about a minute or so.
Okay. And I think that this is, like you said, I mean, this is definitely something that has been the focus has been the state response. The focus has been the county response in terms of COVID response and distribution of vaccines. One of the first questions that I got when I was campaigning was from an 8-year-old boy who asked me, how can you get people to wear masks? And part of that is just communicating the necessity of it. You know, I know that seems like a very simple thing. But again, advocating, getting out in front, communicating the necessity of social distancing and wearing masks and all the other safety requirements. Otherwise, logistical support for vaccination distribution. And that means whatever that requires. I mean, opening up La Crosse Center, closing down roads, whatever needs to be done to make sure that the city is logistically supporting the distribution of vaccines. That's what I would advocate for.
Vicki, what about you? For in a minute or so, what could the city have done differently? Should the city have done differently in response to COVID-19?
I think the piece the city did well, let me put it this way, is they started to meet with the businesses. So when you shut down business, there are people without jobs. And a lot of us did not know what was going to happen to employees. And that is a hardship. A lot of these businesses treat their employees. I heard them say, I gave my food to my employees because I didn't know how they were going to get paid because there's no income coming in. And so it's important to realize that what the city did was their financial hardship coming. They started talking to the businesses, what is needed. They started providing some funds to at least keep lights on, which is vitally important. The piece that needed to happen, though, is the mental strain. A lot of us are experiencing it. I've seen it in some of my happy-go-lucky kids that are not in school. There is a mental crisis that we are still in the midst of, and we really need to get ahead of that as things start to open up in our community.
We're talking today with Vicky Markison, whom you've just heard, also Mitch Reynolds. Both are candidates in the nonpartisan election for mayor of La Crosse. That election happens on April 6th. This is Newsmakers, and if you'd like to hear part of this conversation that you might have missed, it'll be archived on our website as soon as the show's over. You can go there at wpr.org/newsmakers and check it out. Our conversation with Mitch Reynolds and Vicky Markison continues in just a moment. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studio. Thank you very much for joining us today as we talk to the two candidates for mayor of La Crosse, Vicky Markison and Mitch Reynolds, and I appreciate their time today, and I appreciate your listening to us as well. We've talked about taxes, we've talked about infrastructure, we've talked about La Crosse's minority communities, and you can find all of that on the show on our website, wpr.org/newsmakers, if you've missed part of our conversation today. Turning now to the plight of low-income people, and in particular those who find themselves homeless. I want to talk about La Crosse's homeless issue because it affects members of our community in different ways. Obviously, there is the struggle of actually being homeless. What can be done to help people who need assistance? There's also the struggle of residents who encounter people who are without traditional housing as they're going about their life, and in certain situations feel not just inconvenienced, but sometimes express feeling unsafe in those areas as well. Vicky, I want to start with you. What can we do better to make sure that that residents without traditional housing receive the services that they need, whether that's housing, whether that's mental health? What do we have to do to help turn the tide on homelessness in La Crosse?
This issue started before COVID, but COVID made it far more visible. So what happened were a lot of the shelters had to reduce their capacity. And so that forced people out onto the streets. The services were not available as well during the daytime. So this has become a much more visible issue for our community at a time when we had severely cold weather, and the compassion that our community has, we don't like to see people suffering. So before COVID, the county had given money to create the Coalition to End Homelessness. And that group includes CULICAP, that includes Catholic Charities, that includes Salvation Army, that includes Independent Living Resources. And that group, as I got a update a few weeks ago, has done a tremendous job in terms of how they can get people into housing. They are now leasing the Econolodge at a considerable expense, and that is something that needs to be considered. That is not sustainable, obviously. But I was impressed to hear how those organizations were working together. I think what's missing is the long-term solution. There isn't agreement on it. We know there is a certain population that does not want the structure of being in a shelter. And so there will be unsheltered individuals by their own accord. And I know that there's discussions in terms of how they can still be accommodated in the ways that they feel comfortable. I will also say I've talked with the Salvation Army. They have learned a lot from reducing the number of people in a bunk bed style of homelessness. It does not meet the needs of everyone, but when you are in a bunk bed situation with many people, there isn't a good night's sleep happening. There's a fear for personal safety. So the Salvation Army is discussing how they adjust housing for homeless moving forward. So that has been a silver lining in an otherwise horrific pandemic. So one of the pieces that is in question is, so how can we provide housing and then surround people with the services that they need? This is one thing that the Salvation Army has also determined is they're wanting to do a, I've seen expansion models for the Salvation Army in terms of providing classrooms, again, getting the people that they need, the services that they need. And then not to be forgotten, it was just announced that the YWCA is creating a day resource center for runaway and homeless youth as an emergency shelter, which takes care of that child component of homelessness. And so, again, it's done in great collaboration, and I'm really looking forward to see how that collaboration moves things forward.
Vicki Markison is a candidate for mayor, and so is Mitch Reynolds. And I turn to you, Mitch, for an answer to the same question about the plight of the homeless in La Crosse, and also bearing in mind the concerns of residents. How do we deal with this issue?
You know, this is obviously very significant and very complex. There is no simple solution to a complex issue such as this. We need to factor in all sorts of things. I mean, this has been we had obviously the polar vortex really. When we saw the intense levels of cold, and then we had individuals in our community lighting fires in alleys to keep themselves warm, you know, that's the kind of thing that really sparked interest from our downtown business community, was suddenly there were, you know, fires in back alleys, and it caused $1 million worth of damages to business. And now it's really gotten a heightened sense of awareness. But, you know, this has been a significant problem for some time, and it's the awareness of it that has increased. And from my position from the beginning of this campaign is a housing first solution. We need to address housing first, and housing first is a model from the National Alliance to End Homelessness, which focuses on getting our homeless individuals into housing so they can address that very critical principal first need in order for them to step off into other areas of their lives to address other issues. And it's not, there are no requirements there. There's no like sign the dotted line, address your mental health and addiction issues or whatever else is going on. What we're saying is that humans acting humanely, we will provide housing first for those who need it. That's not the only solution. That's part of the solution. That's a great way to end chronic homelessness. We will always have need of shelters. There's always going to be temporary shelters needed for those who find themselves homeless in one instance or another. To that extent, the YWCA's new grant program that was just announced, the $1.4 million worth of HUD funding that will provide for a day resource center for youth, that is going to be an extraordinary addition to the resources that we already have in our community. There's already also, again, with through the YWCA, ILR and Cooley Cap and Habitat and all these Catholic Charities, Salvation Army, all of these groups working together. We have these tremendous amount of resources. In some ways, what we need is to focus that energy and to have someone, and I've talked about having a homeless coordinator within the city of La Crosse, whether that be in a body, an office, or a committee, depending on budgetary constraints and all of that. How can we have some person that's basically doing project management? That's what my background is, project management. So how can we have that person pursuing results, utilizing resources that we already have in place so that we can really find solutions for those chronic homeless individuals, but also those who need temporary shelter on a daily and nightly basis. I mean, it's going to take a big mixed pot of different solutions, but there's a lot of different things that we can do. But at the end of the day, it really does require some significant form of pointed leadership to make sure everything gets done.
This is a nonpartisan election, and so it's somewhat difficult for people to look at two candidates such as yourselves and put them in their usual corners, so to speak. And during the primary, with 10 candidates running against each other, we saw a pretty hard push to the middle from everybody. And people might not have felt like there was a lot to differentiate between candidates. Add to that the fact that this has been a up to now a very positive campaign with people talking about their own ideas and not, you know, name calling and mudslinging. We are, after all, polite Midwesterners. So I want to put you on the spot a little bit. We'll start with you, Mitch. I want you to differentiate yourself from your opponent. What is a matter of important policy for you that you feel differs from something that your opponent stands for?
Well, we've seen a couple of different things. I mean, my focus has been on people, and my focus has been from day one on how we serve people. I don't have a nebulous concept of that I want to serve of whatever it is, economic growth or expansion or whatever that is. I'm interested in how that impacts people. We should build roads in order to make sure that people have a method for having transportation to get to work and to fulfill their lives. I think that that's a pretty essential differentiation. I mean, it is somewhat nuanced, but it's still very important. I think that it's also important, I was not aware of this differentiation, but somebody brought this up in the first debate. It was a question from the public about about political contributions. And my opponent has contributed to the candidacy of Mike Hipsch, who was a Republican state legislator who, among other things, pushed and voted for twice the constitutional amendment to ban same-sex marriage within the state of Wisconsin, among other very divisive actions that he took. I am an individual that has an experience in leadership in two companies that actually that were in terms of my job as a news director, leading an organization to produce a product for consumption within the public, within my job as an operations manager for Whole Trees, actually building things and dealing with people on a regular basis and negotiating with contractors and vendors and facing all of the challenges that small businesses have faced during this pandemic. I'm sure my opponent will talk about how she's not accepting any endorsement from organizations where I believe in the rights of individuals to organize and support candidates who follow their belief system. I support organized labor and the ability to unite around ideologies of unity and strength. And I happily accept the endorsements of organizations who believe as I do. So I think there are key levels of endorsement or of differentiation there. And there are some nuances for certain, and we do both have the interest of the city of La Crosse at large in mind. I think in general, the difference is about intention and about how we get there.
Vicky, I'm going to pose the same question to you, but I want to give you 30 seconds or so to respond specifically to anything that you would like to in Mitch's answer.
And I've addressed the contribution to Mike Hipsch back in 2005. It was a one-time contribution. Someone had told me that part of my job was to contribute. And it was, as I did soul searching after that, I said, no, it's not. And that was my last contribution, which was 16 years ago. So I have chosen to keep this race without D's or R's, because I believe the best interests of our community is about uniting and not dividing. And so I have said, this revelation came when one of the political parties was asking for a questionnaire to be completed. And as I realized why I was running because, as you heard me say, I want to unite people. And by putting a letter of endorsement after my name, it did not hold true to why I wanted to run. I really believe that when we start to have letters after us, it divides our conversation, it sends people away, and we really need to be, again, uniting to move our community forward. So, you know, I have 4 years of journalism experience. I moved into nonprofit world. I have learned from many leaders in this community. I've had 20 different leaders that have taught me what to do, they've taught me what not to do. They've worked side by side with direct competitors for the greater good. And I'm proud of who I have learned from. So, I will also tell you, anyone who's run a nonprofit, it is honestly sometimes harder. I will tell you, because I'm now running a profit. It is sometimes harder because your ability to raise dollars is limited. You can do things that are for the greater good that you have to convince your members or the public that they are worth investing in, and that is very challenging.
We've kind of veered away from a specific response to Mitch's comments toward you, and I did want to give you an opportunity to actually answer the question. What is it that what is a policy difference that you would like to highlight where you believe essentially that your way is a more correct way forward than your opponent?
In terms of policy, my strength is our community's big need right now. If we're going to reduce property taxes, we have to be looking particularly at that commercial development. I know many of the businesses in town, it's a conversation of, will you stay? If we don't make road improvements and there are 100 trucks leaving the downtown area every day, will you stay in the city of La Crosse? Those are legitimate conversations to have. And it's a matter of understanding what businesses need to grow, because when businesses grow, we create jobs, and that is people. Anyone who works in the city of La Crosse or beyond, anyone who works in this area has a vested interest in our economy.
I definitely want to give each of you an opportunity to kind of summarize your hopes for earning the vote of people who are listening to us here today on Newsmakers. So as we close our conversation, go ahead and spend a minute or so, starting with you, Vicki Markison, about summarizing why people should vote for you for the next mayor of La Crosse.
I bring, obviously, that leadership experience that I was getting into probably a little prematurely. So I have 20 years of listening to needs and developing programs around it. And those programs are tremendously successful. So when we talk about products, products come in services, products come in tangible things that are created. I happen to have been in the service industry. So really it's, we don't have enough women in leadership. My being here is a document to that. So developing empowering programs for women, it is meeting the needs of how we attract people to this area. It's addressing affordable housing and quality housing back from my Builders Association days. And it's about blurring those borders. It's uniting people across 3 states, 13 counties. The mayor of La Crosse needs all of these skills and the leadership to lead the department heads and work with a very diverse and, of course, very passionate council at the same time.
Mitch Reynolds, what about you? A summation of why people should vote for you for mayor of La Crosse.
I think it's important that we build a level of cooperation and collaboration with our neighboring villages and towns, as well as the organizations that exist within our city. Just having a conversation yesterday with a town board supervisor in the town of Campbell, a town that has been just stricken with the fear of what's going on with the PFAS contamination. And it really brings rise to the need for someone to be able to communicate effectively with the towns that surround the city of La Crosse, the city of Onalaska as well, the village of Holman, all these municipalities that surround the city of La Crosse. I think that I'm certainly the most would be the most effective at doing that. I want to make very clear that my most important focus has been on fulfilling the needs of people within the city of La Crosse. And it is important that we have economic vitality and viability, and that we have sustainable growth within the city of La Crosse. But I think about Ronald, and Ronald signed my nomination papers, and Ronald had previously been homeless, and he was so excited to sign my nomination papers because he'd been in an apartment for a little less than a year. And I remember asking him, Ronald, what is the most important issue for you for the city moving forward? He said, just solve homelessness, just help the homeless. And there are so many people like Ronald whose needs we can specifically address, and the needs that we can keep in mind when we're focused on the sustainable prosperity of the city for the people of the city of La Crosse. And I have the passion to do that, and I have the background to do that, and I believe that this is going to be an extraordinary city, as it has been for me all these years. We just need to make it that way for everyone who calls this place home.
Mitch Reynolds is a candidate for mayor. Thank you for joining us, Mitch.
You bet. Vicky, thanks for having us.
Vicky Markison, also a candidate for mayor. Vicky, thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much.
This is Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this conversation again, you can find it on our website, which is wpr.org/newsmakers. You can also find the rest of our previous episodes there as well. Thank you very much to Dawn Jewell and John Davis for help producing today's show. Until next time, I'm Ezra Wall. Catch us on the air 10 o'clock a.m. on 90.3, the Ideas Network in La Crosse, 7 p.m. on Fridays. It's on 88.9 WLSU in La Crosse. Until next time, this is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio.